Listen, it happens. You go out for a night with your friends and you wind up drunk, in your underwear, soaking wet, covered with blood, and shipwrecked on a desert island, all within sight of the Empire State Building. These things happen, or at least they did happen, to Alex Zharov. Alex is 17 years old. He moved to the U.S. from a small town in the Ukraine when he was 9. He's skinny and wears tie-dyed t-shirts, an unmanageable spray of frizzy blonde hair, and a valiant, if not altogether successful, starter mustache. And, well, he can probably introduce himself better than I can. Here's how he responds when I ask him to state his name for the record.
My name is Alex Zharov, and I love to have very radical experiences in life. And I consider myself to be a psychedelic, artistically productive person.
Here are a few other things about Alex. He lives with his cute older girlfriend and his exceptionally patient parents in a small apartment in the Midwood section of Brooklyn. Instead of going to high school, he's enrolled in an internet homeschooling program. He's at work on a science fiction novel and has logged several hundred in-flight hours as a student pilot. But most of Alex's time is spent as the guitarist, singer, and songwriter for his band, E-Buffalo. When I went to see them play at a two-day Russian rock festival last fall, I learned several things. First, there are many, many ex-Soviet immigrants living in Brooklyn. Second, they all, very earnestly, want to rock. And third, Alex Zharov, whether he's writhing on his back on stage or reclining in the dressing room with a beer and a cigarette, is kind of a superstar. Before we get to our story, the other key person you'll need to meet is someone who entered Alex's life at a crucial moment years ago, when Alex first came to the States. Alex had an awkward adjustment. He fought in school and was kind of depressed. He was bored. Then one day Alex was walking along the Brighton Beach boardwalk and saw a group of older guys collecting money for something called the Russian Punk Rock Club of America. Older guys like 25 and 30 years old. Alex was 12. One of the musicians he met that day was Roman Gajilov, who immediately took to the young Alex.
Well, he had this blink in his eyes. It's sometimes you see extraordinary person and, you know, you kind of know this. You know, he wasn't appear to us as 12-year-old at that moment. At 12 years old, he was writing songs that I was writing at 18. And after this, you know, we've been together all the time. We call him Hrusha, you know.
And what does that mean?
Hrusha means little piglet.
Under his new friend's tutelage, Alex began walking around in an old Bolshevik-style hat and trench coat. And his friends gave him books. Dostoevsky, Tolkien, Guides to Slavic Paganism, The Beats, and also Robinson Crusoe and Treasure Island. Alex was particularly fond of those. And our story today, our own seafaring tale, happens on a boat that Roman owns, a 25-foot white sailboat, which Alex likes to refer to as the yacht. One cool evening last May, Alex, Roman, and another friend named Alex, Alex Lubachansky, decided to take a nice little boat trip in Jamaica Bay, the body of water that wraps around the southern end of Brooklyn. Here's Alex.
The three of us decided to just get like 10 gallons of gas, and my friend Roman, he got a bottle of rum, and we got 2 cans of food, and we just decided to have a cool trip on the yacht. And I started saying, oh, our goal is the open ocean. Let's sail to Poland, I told them.
Roman had a slightly less ambitious agenda.
The plan was just to go to the bridge, under the Rockaway Bridge, then turn around, and then come back. It should have taken about 40 minutes, yeah.
Things started to go wrong almost immediately. Before they even left the marina, Roman, who'd been making headway through the bottle of rum, fell into the water and they had to haul him back in. He was clearly in no shape to drive. This is Alex.
He got drunk and he just was babbling something, laughing, like he said, don't go there, don't go there. And he was constantly saying, don't hit the shallows. He was already like, he didn't control the situation by that time.
As a responsible journalist, I should say for the record that Roman does have one objection to Alex's version of events.
It wasn't the rum, by the way. It was a cognac. I don't know why everybody puts rum. So it was a cognac.
You sure?
It was a Latrec, yes. It was Latrec cognac. I don't know why. How come it's become rum? It's probably Alex told it was rum, but it was cognac. Not a little bit, it was a lot. We was out of commission. Yeah, I was out of commission.
Alex and Alex had had a few drinks themselves.
But we were perfectly sober and everything. We might have had a few drinks, but we were perfectly sober.
But neither of you knows how to drive a boat.
No, no, but we got a hold of it. It wasn't that hard. So we knew how to drive it. So like it didn't seem pretty hard. You turn on the motor, you turn the boat, it turns, cool.
Somehow they managed to get out of the marina, gun the engine, and take off across the water toward the Marine Park Bridge in the distance. Once there, they decided to try to sail to Brighton Beach and headed toward a landmass. But they got confused and turned back to open water. They drank some rum, or maybe cognac. One way or another, they drank a lot of it. At one point, they almost crashed into a small island. Gas was running low, but they figured that if worse came to worse, they could always put up the sails and still make it home. Then they got caught in a strong current that turned the boat in circles. The perfect time, you would think, to begin to panic. Or, if you're the kind of person who forgets trouble the moment you're out of it, or even while you're in it, the perfect time to shoot off all the boat's flares into the water, just for fun. Finally, the series of mistakes reached a critical mass. They had no cell phone. Romans had died when he fell in the water. No flares, no captain, and almost no gas. Even Alex had to admit they were in trouble.
We didn't know where we were. And then we realized we weren't gonna make it anywhere. And we're like, in the morning, we'll figure out what to do. So we went to sleep.
It was a glorious spring morning on Jamaica Bay. Sun glinting off the water, gulls calling overhead, as our young pleasure cruisers slumbered. The light filtering into the boat's cabin woke Roman and Alex Glubachansky first, and they came up on deck. What they saw was not good. After drifting through the night, the boat had come to rest in the shallows of a small bay alongside an uninhabited landmass. Stretching out behind them, they could see a long furrow where the tide had dragged them deep into thick mud. And as they stood there, blinking and wondering how this might have happened, the wind carried them another 10 feet inland. They could see the skyline of Manhattan on the horizon, the runways of JFK Airport a little closer, and signs of civilization in every direction. They could even see boats passing by in the distance, but these were too far away to take any notice. It was obvious that they were, in a word, shipwrecked. The hungover sailors sat down to decide what to do. Roman and Glubachansky were in favor of waiting to be rescued or for the tide to rise and pull them out again. Meanwhile, Alex was formulating his own plan. Beyond the island they were closest to lay another landmass, which Alex was sure led somewhere. His idea was to swim to it, walk to civilization, catch a bus somewhere, and bring back help for his friends, who, as Alex remembers it, thought the plan was frankly idiotic. "These are islands," said Roman, who in truth had actually been out on the bay before and was in a position to know. But Alex was sure that Roman was wrong. So Alex stripped to his underwear. He put what he thought he might need in a waterproof plastic mayonnaise jar. He brought his MetroCard, for the bus he was going to swim to, an expired passport, for ID, and his favorite Buddhist medallion, for luck. He wrapped his clothes in a cellophane blanket and bid his friends farewell. Roman watched him disappear into the surf.
Of course, I tried to stop him. I tried to give him reasonable things, but he got a little bit too much excited, so I decided to give him a challenge in life. What should I just knock him down and say, stop it, you know? He wanted to swim, and he swam.
I swam really violently to get myself warmed up, and by the middle, I got really tired, and it was really cold, and I'm like, oh, it's much worse than I thought, and there's birds flying like peeking on me. I'm like, oh, these crazy, strange Farakwe birds are gonna bite me or something, you know? And I got really lucky because my legs suddenly hit the bottom, and I'm like, and I was so happy when I came out there. I was so cold, but I was happy. Okay, and I was definitely sure that it was civilization because tall buildings were right behind the trees. They were like, and the bridge was right over there, and I'm like, oh, finally, and I was even singing a song walking, and the birds were screaming something to me, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I made it.
I'm still not sure I understand why you left your friends, though?
Because I thought we were going to be stuck there for a really long time, maybe for the whole day. The only thing I could do is just try to get to civilization. And especially these islands, they were pressuring me to go there. You know, they were so close. And I'm like, and I got really bored. You know, I wake up in the morning. I don't want to stay in one spot on the yacht and like, and think about how we're going to get saved. You know, I really want to do something. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have this little adventure. I'm going to go out and try to make it somewhere. And I did.
Except he didn't. Soon he realized that he was indeed on another island, with no way off except to swim back through the freezing water to rejoin his friends. And he wasn't about to do that. He was alone. So Alex set about doing all the things a good castaway should do. He wrote a giant help in the sand for the benefit of the planes landing at JFK. He circumnavigated the island looking for supplies. He found a stick and a piece of red cloth and made a flag to signal passing ships. Then he found several big pieces of styrofoam and some wood and spent an hour or two fashioning a raft, but it collapsed when he sat down on it. Undeterred, he went back to searching for something that would be his ticket off the island. And then he found it. It was the hollowed-out carcass of a jet ski, or as he calls it, a scooter.
I 100% knew that it was going to float, although it was pretty badly dug into the sand. And as I was digging out the scooter, something really bad happened. Like, there was a pieces of glass under it. I didn't see. I was just digging and digging. And I didn't have any shovel or anything. And I cut my finger really bad. I started getting huge amounts of blood was coming out. And I had this white T-shirt. It was eventually all in blood.
Now there was really no way off the island, even by swimming. Because, well, you know, sharks. It was a galling situation. And it was made even more maddening because the city was right there.
I was like thinking, how in the hell did I get myself into this situation? I never believed that something like this could happen in New York City, you know? Like, in such a huge city that you could see skyscrapers like 10 miles away. And on the other side, you can die looking at them, you know? Like, and also, I got a little mad at the city of New York. Like, I could understand if they had just one payphone there, or at least, I don't know, like, a button to press to know that you're there, you know? By probably 6 o'clock in the evening, it was getting a little dark. All my excitement has fled away, and I got very cold, so I was like shaking, you know, shivering, and no help at all. So I'm like, wow, this is gonna get really bad.
Were you hungry at this point also?
I was very hungry and I was very thirsty. And I found limes. I tried to open them up, but they tasted so nasty. I didn't even think about eating them. Like, there was no source of food other than the ducks.
Ah, yes, the ducks. You'll want to hear about the ducks.
I wasn't going to get rescued in the next hour or two. I had a plan to kill a bunch of ducks to get some warm blood to warm myself, you know, so to drink some blood and to cut them open and use them, like, to warm myself. I had this strange idea about use them as slippers. After that, I even had this psychedelic idea of floating on the ducks, making a raft out of the ducks. Imagine a man with strings attached to the ducks floating on the water. So it's like this duck rider, you know? It's totally normal for a Russian hiker to go and pick up a duck, and not just to kill it, but to eat it. Like,
Like, you could just go over and pick up a duck? Like, how did you catch the duck?
Oh, you just go after it with a stick. I mean, you're a human being. You got more brains than a duck. You can catch it. But I wasn't really thinking about doing it. I wasn't, like, fantasizing about killing ducks or anything like that. I was just thinking that if it comes to that, I'll have to get some blood to drink, you know? I know it sounds very violent, but, like, I was fighting for my life, you know? Like, people might laugh when they hear about being trapped on an island that's so close to civilization and the sharks and the ducks. I knew it's a funny situation, but I really got the feeling of what is it like being on a desert island. I felt like Robinson Crusoe, you know? I knew what it was like to be by yourself, away from civilization, with no help, and you're facing this huge problem, and the only person that's near you is you and the ghost of your death close by, you know? So I can smell my death in the air.
It turns out that the island where Alex was stranded is called Ruffel Bar, and it lies only a 20-minute boat ride away from the coast of Brooklyn. Far from being traumatized or ashamed of his exploits, Alex wanted nothing more than to go back out there. And from the vantage of my overpriced, undersized apartment, I wanted to see a place where you could be totally alone in the wilderness, smelling your own death in the air, while in at least theoretical commuting distance to Midtown Manhattan. So we hired a boat to take us to Ruffel Bar. In truth, I wasn't as completely surprised as some might be to learn that such a place exists. I grew up near the islands of Jamaica Bay, in a neighborhood called Canarsie. And when I was little, my friends and I would cut through the empty lots near my house to explore the mix of trash and nature on the shoreline. It was a place totally apart from the rest of my mostly urban childhood, a secret place that my friends who lived even 10 or 15 blocks away were unaware existed. But then, the smaller islands around New York have always occupied a weird place on the edge of the city, home to all sorts of enterprise that the citizenry either doesn't know about or prefers not to see. Sanitariums and prisons, potter's fields and grand failed schemes. Ruffel Bar itself had been the site of several of the latter. Since the Civil War, it had housed a ferry stop, a resort hotel, and even a short-lived doomed community of some 40 buildings. We stop in front of a concrete foundation.
A building of some kind was here.
Oh, look, this is a cool thing. This is one of the World War II things that's here. Like, you open them up and you can go inside. There's like a room in there. It might be like something like a bunker or something. You see the rope here? And the rope is really old. Let me take a picture of this.
There are no buildings left here. The island has returned to a deeply wild state. There's a wall of dense brush and a few trees around which sinister gulls are circling. We pass a flock of ducks who take one look at Alex and wisely move away.
I'm really thinking about where the heck is the scooter, because it seems like it should be, like, as we turn in, there should be more shoreline here. And really, maybe the... Yep, that's exactly it.
Oh, wow.
This is the scooter I tried to dig out. Let me show you. Maybe you'll see the glass and stuff. Oh, it's awesome. See, there's lots
of, like... As we search for Alex's Buddhist medallion that he'd left in the excitement of the helicopter rescue, we walk across a plain of thick, dry grass, matted down like a carpet. Underneath, you can hear shells crunching and mysterious things scurrying around. Still, reminders that we are, in fact, in a major metropolis are always close at hand. For one thing, there's the garbage. Piles of plastic and driftwood, but also shoes, steering wheels, prescription bottles, deflated balloons, a washer-dryer, several refrigerators, and, oddly, boats. Three perfectly intact ones, complete with oars. I hesitate to point these out to Alex, though, to be fair, they're probably too heavy for him to have dragged to the water. And then there's this reminder of civilization.
Hold on. Yeah. Алло? Здравствуй, папа. Мы сейчас на необитаемом острове.
He was always close enough to the city that simply having a cell phone would have had him tucked safely into bed within half an hour. Alex was finally rescued after 7 hours, thanks to Roman and Glubachansky. Back on the boat, they were having a fine old time. A police helicopter was performing drills nearby, and apparently no slouches in the cliched castaway department themselves, they had figured out that they could signal it with a mirror. But why rush?
We really enjoyed the time staying there. We was just, you know, sitting in the boat and, you know, smoking the last tobacco that we have left. And we make a deal that we're not going to eat each other if we're really going to get hungry. So basically we was having fun. You know, just a little bit, no hustle, no nothing, you know, very quiet, nice weather.
Oh, so you didn't, so you were actually holding off signaling the helicopters while you had a nice day?
Yeah, of course. It was a nice day.
Still, as it began to get dark and the cigarettes ran out, the friends thought it was probably time to get a move on. A helicopter soon arrived and airlifted them off the boat. It wasn't until they were safely ashore, wrapped in blankets and being fed complimentary cookies, that either of them happened to mention that there'd been a third passenger. When the helicopter came back for Alex, cold, exhaustion, and dehydration had left him in a trance-like, almost wild state. And for him, this island will always be a place where, maybe, there'd be monsters.
And I was actually, when I was here, I was wondering if it's like a totally wild place. Are there any animals here other than birds? I was maybe hoping to see some cool animal, like a badger or something. I don't know. I like badgers a lot, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite animals. You know, I like badgers for the same reason, probably, I like the state of Utah, where I never was, you know? It's like something that has some kind of, what's it called, like a secret, or it's hiding, or it's like, they attract me in a way that they might be hiding something cool from me.
And that's what, after many hours spent with Alex, I find myself liking about him the most. His insistence on finding mystery and adventure everywhere he looks. It's easy to laugh at that, to write it all off as adolescent stupidity. But what if it's more than that? What if it's also a kind of adolescent magic?
Actually, I'm thinking that this needed to happen, you know? I think like if I was a boring person and I would just like stay at home all the time and be like a nerd, I would never get into this situation. So I think this happened strictly because I was with the right people at the right time, like in the right situation, you know?
Think about that. Every step of the way, by almost any measure, Alex could not have been more wrong. It takes a special kind of grace to turn that into right time, right place. And how can you help but envy that? Who wouldn't rather live in a world where if you believe you should have an adventure, you do? In which each of your mistakes doesn't narrow your life, but expands it. In which the worst thing that could possibly happen is being bored, and you can go to sleep on stormy seas and trust that when you wake up, if you're very lucky, you'll be in Utah. What I'm trying to say is this. Alex does something I never in a million years would have thought possible. He makes me think it might be cool to be a teenager again. There's a story that, back in the 1830s, a ship carrying $54,000 in Mexican gold was hijacked by pirates outside Jamaica Bay, and that the treasure was buried somewhere near Ruffle Bar. On our way back from the island, I tell Alex this, and he listens with great interest. If he found the treasure, he wants to know, could he keep it? Maybe, I say, if he didn't tell anybody. To which Alex answers precisely as I know he will, the only way he possibly can. He says, but what if I told everybody?
Brett Martin, in New York.